streets don't love you back. Stay tuned every Wednesday at 11:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 8:30 Pacific, with your hosts, Boyd and Lucinda, for the hottest talk show in existence. The streets don't love you back. I gotta do right before they call
me home. Good evening and welcome to the Streets Don't Love You Back show. I'm your host, Lucinda, with my co-host, Boyd. And our topic is, as always, the streets don't love you back. Join us every Wednesday night with real people, real stories, and real changes as we hear the truth about gangs, drugs, violence, abuse, and other life issues. We have a great show for you tonight. Our guest is Mr. Curtis Chambers, a.k.a. Kurt Bones. He was born in Washington, D.C. in 1969, Langston Terrace, the oldest ghetto in D.C. He started hustling at the age of 12 with weed, then PC, then coke. He was locked up in 1989 on the largest drug case in D.C. history, a.k.a. the Rayful Edmund case, indicted for conspiracy, murder after the fact, and the gun used in the murder, facing 35 to life. So tonight we're going to hear his story. And before we do that, let me welcome Boyd to the show.
Yeah, I just want to thank everybody who tunes into our radio show every Wednesday night. And like we always do in the beginning of the show, we'd just like to thank all our soldiers throughout the Fed and the State Joint that roll with the Streets and Love You Back movement. Our newsletter goes to 150 prisons across the country every month. And I just want to give a shout-out to my three brothers, Marvell, Christopher, and Robbie, serving a life sentence in Detroit prison. And we're just thanking God for everybody who's out here educating these kids and trying to show them it can be done and it is a better tomorrow, you know. And tonight we got a man online that's going to let the world know that it is a better tomorrow, you know, because he was once one of the cats on the other side of the fence, but God saved him, and now he got a message to tell the world, you know. Without further ado, we would like for my man to formally introduce himself, and we'll get this show started.
Hey, what's going on? What's going on, man? It's Kurt. Most know me as Kurt Bone, man. I'm from D.C., and it's a pleasure to be on your show.
We appreciate it, Kurt, man, you know. And we just want you to vibe, man, and start off letting people know, how did you grow up, man, in D.C., man, and, you know, what led you into this life of crime?
I mean, basically, you know, I grew up just like any average young cat in the hood, watching the older guys do their thing and inspired by the streets. I didn't have one of those stories where my mother wasn't doing that, and she did her part, you know, so I was just more intrigued with the older cats, you know what I'm saying? They was robbing banks and hustling and doing all the things, and it just caught my attention. And me being a young cat, and I was always a leader, you know what I'm saying? I just kind of took my leader skills and pushed in that direction, and the rest was history, man. You know, got going, had a lot of different experiences, and the rest was history.
My man. So we're going to go back on you. You know, when the very first time you really started getting into the game to the point where you was moving weight, as we call it back in the old days, you know.
What
led to that situation, man? And, you know, when you was taking your baby steps, and what led you into that triple beam scale?
Right. Well, okay. When I was taking my first step, my first thing, I started playing with the dice. And where I grew up at, we always had three or four crap games simultaneous. You had your 50-cent crap games, you had your dollar crap games, you had your $5 crap game, then you had your 20 and over. So me being a young dude, of course, I was in the dollar crap games, but my goal was always to be in that 20 and over joint, you know what I'm saying? So everybody was, the drug of choice back then was heroin, PCP, but of course, me being so young, you know, none of the older cats were going to take a chance with putting me in the game. So me and a couple of my little buddies, we started messing with the weed, you know what I'm saying? So when I started selling the weed, it put me in a position where I can step my game up in the bigger crap games, man, and really weed was the first thing I started doing hand in hand. And a lot of older cats took a liking to me, and it just went from there, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, so it went from weed, and it went to boat, buying your water and wetting the weed down. That's love boat for those who might don't know, that we call in D.C., And then after that, you know what I'm saying, I just gradually did that for a while and built my base up, built, put more followers under me. You know, my crew got bigger. And then next thing you know, it was Induced to Cope. And it was just like hitting the Powerball from that point.
My man, you know. And now, D.C., it is like, you know, I used to hear about you D.C. boys, you know what I'm saying, back home in Detroit, you know. And running through the 80s, you know, because I got two cousins that stay up there in Washington, D.C., you know.
Right.
I didn't know what that Love Boat thing was until he came to Detroit and he was like, yeah, man, you know, that Love Boat is real heavy up in D.C. I'm looking at him like, what are you talking about, man?
Right. They call it butt naked, yeah.
Yeah, down our way, we call it the sherm stick, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
It was the Love Boat, you know?
Right, exactly.
So
they call it butt naked because when you smoke it, you get so hot, it want to make you take your clothes off. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So you had girls and dudes running around butt naked, so that's why they nicknamed it butt naked. You know what I'm saying?
Right. And I told my wife about that, man. You know, like, you know, when we first started out selling it in the projects in Detroit back in the early 80s, you know, my homeboy, Daddy, owned a funeral home, you know? So he would always get the fluid from the funeral home for free for us. You know what I'm saying?
One of the main ingredients.
So we used to laugh at cats in the project. Sometimes we used to give them a $10 stick just to go on out there because we know they're finna act a fool, you know what I mean?
Right.
How serious that thing was when we was young, you know? We used to just give it to them because they run down the street naked and hollering and screaming, but as I got older, I realized this shit is real, you know what I'm saying?
Right, it ain't no joke, man. I mean, when you're young, you're chasing money. So you're not really looking at the fact of what it's doing, you know what I'm saying? You get your neighborhood celebrity going to the 20th power, but you destroy the hood simultaneously. But when you're young, you don't see it. You know what I'm saying? The money's so fast, the girls coming plentiful, the dudes that you used to look up to looking up to you. You know what I'm saying? So you just get lost in the shuffle. But man, you know when you're young, man, you think you're gonna live forever and count money forever. And until you look up, you get encountered at 4 o'clock in one of the penal systems across the country. You know what I'm saying? So it's a devastating situation. And like I say, when I speak to younger men of the day, they be so gone about the fact that I can walk away from it, don't ever get my feedback wet. But I tell them, it's just like getting all crack. Crackheads had dreams and dope fiends had dreams of relapsing. It's the same way I had with going in the streets. But I understand my spiritual side. And I made with God my pact that I don't want to pause in the community no more. And also the reality that it's destructing our whole generation. You know what I'm saying? So I don't want to take part in that. You know what I'm saying? And in the same token, when I speak to them, I choose my words carefully because I know how I was once them before. So I know when you're talking to them and you tell them things like that, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to spook them or make them feel like, you know, they Satan themselves, you know what I'm saying? I've been trying to get it across to them as passive as possible because I was once them, so I know how they think. You know what I'm saying? I know how they think. You know what I'm saying? So, man, you know, it's an ugly situation. And D.C. is small. It ain't big as, you know, like a Detroit or Chicago, another of the biggest cities in New York. We're a small town, you know what I'm saying? So, you know.
Get around quick.
Yeah, it get around fast, you know what I'm saying? Once you grow up, you're looking up, you're serving somebody's mother, you know what I'm saying? Somebody you went to school with mother, you done got them on it, you know what I'm saying? So it's like, man, it ain't like them bigger towns. You go across town, don't ever see nobody again. So it was a hell of an experience, man, but, you know, everything made me to the man I am, so I'm not going to say that I totally regret it. You know, so I just regret the harm that I know I brought to the community.
My man. So what I want to ask you, Kurt, man, you know, we go back to some of your younger days, you know, before I get into the big things with you. In your young days, man, can you tell the viewers, you know what I mean, what got you in trouble? You know, was you in and out the juvenile system as a young kid, or what was that kid like before you stepped in the zone?
Yeah, believe it or not, out of all my crew, and we used to be 20, 15 to 20 deep. When I say my crew, not, I'm not relating that to my case, our corporation, but I mean my immediate crew. You know what I'm saying? I was probably the only one that didn't do no juvenile time. My first case was that case. My educational background wasn't a typical one. I mean, I was always the smartest dude in the school. I kept almost a 4.0 and wasn't even doing homework or nothing. My stepfather, God rest the dead, was a Navy vet, and he came into my life and he stayed on top of me. And being that I was getting good grades, I was able to play in the streets without being detected from my family because my grades was good and my brother's grades was real subpar. So, you know, so with me, I ain't had that juvenile going in and out to reform school and going to different joints. I didn't really go to no joints. But I was so busy just, I know what I had to do to keep my family out of my business and all my extra time. I was around the older dudes. You know what I'm saying? I mean, they took so much of liking to me, man. I mean, one of my first moves was old dudes taking me to Louisiana to the Final Four. Big boxing matches, you know what I'm saying? I could set pick for them when they pickpocket, you know what I'm saying? They might use me to distract somebody, you know what I'm saying? I mean, that's how much like they took it to me. I mean, one another crazy thing I did, like I had to clean down the bank money. When the guy get on their bank money, they had me and they cleaned down their bank money, you know what I'm saying? So I did a lot of shit and experienced a lot of things and learned a lot of things at a young age, but some of the things, I was so young, I couldn't really dissect them all, but I was ear hustling. And couldn't really figure it all out, but it took such a liking to me, I was able to see a lot of that stuff. And one of the crazy things at a young age that I couldn't decipher, and I laugh about it to the day, is I was pretty good at football, and I could fight pretty good, so everybody was going to the police boys and girl club. So my buddies were like, man, come on up there, man, they want you to play, they asking for you, da-da-da-da. But me ear hustling with the older guys and not really understanding everything I'm hearing, all I heard was, you don't fuck with the police. And I hear police boys girl club. So, man, I know he was playing and went up there and played. You know what I'm saying? Because they didn't have the title. But, you know, I get older and finally there's a title. Man, the police have a title, I don't even be there. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, so that's one of the experiences that being young and you being around so much stuff and you really can't dissect it all, man. But like I say, man, I did so much stuff, man. Sometimes I say people say write a book, but I say only a dude that lived it will understand it and really believe that some of that shit could happen. I say a normal civilian wouldn't even be able to understand what a dude went through and still able to be here to tell his story and still be relevant. In 2013,
as I was in the 80s,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. So, that's
know,
special. The many soldiers ain't here to tell that message. You feel me?
Right. Yeah. 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 And the ones who hit and the goo and half the guys up here that was in that era, they wasn't in the game. They was on the sideline watching. So they distorting the truth to the young people that's out here that really can't investigate them because you know what I'm saying. They just giving them credit because they age, but they wasn't in the game. They was on the sideline, half of them.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Like these young folks say, Google me. And if I can't see your ass on Google, then I don't know who you are.
Right. Yeah, man.
We play Detroit Lions against Baltimore, and I don't see your name nowhere on the roster.
Right. And your uniform ain't get dirty. You ain't even getting the game. Your uniform ain't get dirty. You know what I'm saying? You in the stands. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, but that's how it goes, man. A lot of the cats wasn't fortunate enough to be around, you know, to tell a real story and explain why a lot of stuff happened and why the effect of what it is, you know?
We really appreciate you coming on the show, man. And a little bit on in the show, then you can tell the viewers how we came to meet.
Oh, okay, definitely.
Welcome to the show, Kurt.
Happy to be here, sweetheart.
Thanks. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your family life. And
okay.
I mean, obviously, you said that you were kind of looking out to the older cats in the street and stuff. But what was your family life like? How many brothers and sisters did you have? Did mom and dad know what you were doing out there, or was that kind of like a secret? You had your outside street life, and your family life was separate. Or when did they find out what was going on?
Right. Well, like I say, I was tinkering around the streets from like around 12, and they didn't know, you know what I'm saying, because I wasn't making enough noise for really the other parents to get it back to them. And my brother, he was one of those guys that he was messing around with the love boat and smoking the weed, so he was kind of distracting the attention with his behavior. So I was kind of almost like not even being looked at or being monitored like that. So I was able to, you know, kind of steal for a long time, but I think they kind of got a whiff what I was doing, but still wasn't sure probably when I got around 15, you know what I'm saying, because I probably stopped asking for money at the age of 13 or 14, and then 15 I started having a lot of things and they not giving me no money, so they kind of putting two and two together, but still not really sure of what I'm doing. And as far as my, you know, I have one brother. I grew up with one brother. I grew up with my mom and a stepdad. My stepdad is, back then, I thought he was the worst person I ever known, but, you know, as I got older, I got in my top three or four of all time. Next to Nat Turner and Malcolm X, he's like third. You can put him in any order you want to put him. I mean, he was great to me. He showed me a lot, taught me a lot. I didn't understand it then. So I'm not, like I say, I tell all of y'all, I'm not one that can say that I had to do because I wasn't eating or my mother ain't had nothing. Like, I mean, because they work hard to try to, you know, keep us from happening to go out there and do little things, whatever. But I was, like I said, I was just intrigued. But I was just one that had to go. You know what I'm saying? So that's all that was. But I had a pretty decent good life. I thought we didn't have much until I could go to my friend's house. And then I seen that we wasn't that bad. We was pretty good. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, and I go over their house and open the refrigerator. They ain't got nothing in there but some water and government cheese and two or three pieces of bologna and more people in the house than I got in mine. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, I tap my mother on the back every chance I get for bringing us up in those conditions.
Right. So, well, you know, I know, like you said, you know, people that didn't live through that era and didn't go through, you know, what you guys went through, especially with the drug scene and, you know, people making millions of dollars. I mean, people now can't understand it or comprehend it. And you know, it'll never happen again.
Right. That'll never happen again.
Right. What did it feel like out there, you know, during that time when you had everything and you could do anything?
It was an unbelievable feeling. I mean, it's really indescribable. But I'll say when I look back on it, it was just amazing because I never really found it until I see now. When I look at it now through some 44-year-old eyes, and I'm seeing like the stuff that the Jay-Z's doing and the Puff's doing, and you know some of the cats that get some real money out there doing. I'm like, damn. We was moving like that at 16 and 17, going to stores and where they selling the Versace and the balls, and they actually, when we come in, locking the doors and putting everybody out. But we was getting that treatment everywhere we went. I didn't even know that was special treatment. I thought that was normal procedure. You know what I'm saying? Because everywhere we go, that's what it was. We go in the club, you know what I'm saying? They gonna shut it down. They gonna put us in the VIP, and they gonna stop the line, and, you know, so all that was normal kind of messed me up now, because I don't really go nowhere, because I don't do lines. And just from being as a young dude, just getting that type of treatment, so it was unbelievable, and our town was a real aggressive town, always been an aggressive town, you know what I'm saying, just like the Detroit, the Chicago, the New York, but it's smaller than those joints, so when you got beef, you can't really go across town and get missing, you're going to run into somebody. It 15 minutes, you're on one east side of the town. So the killing was crazy. The lean and the snorting game was crazy. And all that stuff was almost over top of us. Like we never really experienced it. So it was just like the treatment was crazy. So, you know, I can't even really, really paint you a picture of it. You know what I'm saying? When I look back now through my eyes, I just know God was with me.
Exactly. Because we know that so many people from that era either, you know, got killed because everybody started turning on each other, or they went to prison. There's very few that are here to tell their stories, and you're right.
Right. Yeah. And I was like one of the youngest cats with the crew. You know, so I probably was one of the youngest ones, probably the two or three. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, and They're not here. I mean, it's sad. They just not here to tell them, like I was telling, you know, your husband earlier, when the people that was here, is like they, with the money they giving out for, because they, everybody intrigued with the 80s. So the people that got the 80s AIDS, they cashing in. They making up shit. I mean, just making, they literally just making up shit and getting money. So it's like, it's crazy. You know what I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
I mean, so,
yeah.
So I see it and I'm hearing it and I'm like, damn, though, you wasn't nowhere on the scene. You know what I'm saying? So it's
right.
Like, man, but I guess that's,
we
that, that's what
that
attitude. You know what I'm
yeah,
saying? That, I mean, that's what it came to. You know what I'm saying? So,
we're going to get into that on the show tonight about how these guys, you know, that's in prison, that's out here in the street, that has never been in the drug trade or never met none of us, you know what I mean?
Right.
And they out here
getting
paid by trying to tell a half-assed story, you know? We're going to get
into that.
Right. And right now, we're going to take a short commercial break and be right back. And the missus can talk on that.
All right, we're going to listen to a song real quick. It's called Fair Warning by Guaranteed of Blunt Entertainment South. We'll be right back.
Toonies never say die.
See ya. It's a fair warning. We ain't never told you life was going to be this hard. Life is what you make. You can take it as it is. See, the only thing promised to us is death. So until that day, y'all niggas just got
to
live y'all life. Blunty and T.
Englewood
Monster,
focused,
DJ Goonie, by the way.
Stay above water.
We in this motherfucker turned up.
Can't let them drown y'all here, man.
Big fish, small pond. Englewood Monster, let the niggas know what time it is.
Hold up. Lights. Young killers, a murker nigga for city stripes. What's the purpose in pressing the big homies? You do the 25 years all by your lonely. I guess you never know where that diploma would have got you. Maybe scholarships to an Ivy League college. Could have been first class on a full ride, but you set up for a trial date on a homicide. Seems like the hood has always been a hot topic. But if you really from the hood, you trying to get about it. We ducking feds and you busters ducking pop. Paparazzi, surrounded by hoes, dope fiends, and alcoholics. It's invested. I'm swimming in a cesspool. Just another street confession, learning a lesson or two. And these days, everybody wanna be a G, but only real G's knowing shit up in these city streets. Except a death sentence or a life sentence. So much pain, you bury your whole life in it. I spill blood and tears up on the paper and reflect over the years as I'm riding in my scraper. She could have been another America's top model, but she decided to swallow it in a vodka bottle. He could have been the next athlete to take flight, but he shot it in needles and smoked it out of crack pipe. It's a dirty game, so I stay super clean. Boy, it's a cold world, it'll make you spit clean. They say it's dark as hell, and they say hell hot, and they got souls for sale, I guess they selling out. The temptation is so compelling, they rebelling out. Not concerned about the future, just about the here and now. Streets is detrimental, it'll cripple any dream. My young-minded mental would've went for anything. Easily influenced, just like on these days. I used to walk blind, but now I see straight. I wish I never had to walk a road the streets paved. I got to see it all, and y'all got to say. I'm on my knees thanking God just to see the morning. Just consider this verse to be a fair warning. Fair warning.
Coming this September the 14th, 2013, it's the Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day. Our goal is to educate our youth about the dangers of gang violence, drugs, abuse, and that there are many alternatives to street life. This day is to network, helping others against the abuse. The Streets Don't Love You Back movement help and educate all year round. We will be collecting clothes, jackets, blankets, underwear, socks, backpack, and hygiene products for the domestic violence shelters. Please let us know if we have to pick up, or you can send your donations to P.O. Box 1093, Maricopa, Arizona 85139. That's P.O. Box 1093, Maricopa, Arizona 85139. The Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day. This September the 14th, 2013. The walk starts 10 a.m. to 12 p.m.
starting at the top level boxing gym. It's the Streets Don't Love You Back Domestic Violence Awareness Day, September the 14th, 2013. Sponsored by the Streets Don't Love You Back Movement Youth Block, the top level boxing gym, the Phoenix Boys and Girls Center, the Black Information Highway, and JCS 2364.
Hey, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome right back here to the Streets of Love You Back Radio Show Worldwide. And we're kicking it with my man, Kurt Bone, tonight out of D.C., and he's here kicking it live and kicking the real. You feel me? Right back with you, Kurt, man.
Yeah, I'm still here, man.
Yeah. And we just want to say, Kurt, man, we're right back with you, and we want to just ask you, man, we're going to move the ball up a little bit now. You feel me?
Okay, that's a bet.
Yeah, let's talk about now, man, when the game got good to you, man. Let's talk about when you met that guy named Rayford Atman, the D.C. Finest. You feel me?
Okay.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Okay, all right. Well, I met him probably around 86. I met him around 86. I was in high school, and some dudes from his area got put out of their school, and they got transferred to my high school. So they was supposedly making some noise up there or whatever. So at my high school, I was running my high school, staying all the Northeast, and they came over there, and we ended up getting into it with his little buddies that was, you know, hustling on the strip or whatever. They grew up around his way. So we ended up getting out on them real bad. So they tried to set a meeting up with us to talk, but they wanted to talk on their ground. So I told them, man, I ain't coming down there. We'll just see each other when we see each other. So, you know, time went past. We went to a few go-go's down here. That's the go-go. That's like our live bands. That's what we go to on the weekends. And we still didn't break bread. We still didn't knock each other. And we went to the bowling alley, which is an after spot for after the go-go's back then. And we got in a big fight with some guys out of PC County, Maryland. And he actually, they outnumbered us, and he actually assisted us with his buddies. And, you know, long story short, we ended up, after the big fight was over, we ended up going to the International House of Pancakes and talked all night from 3 something in the morning to the next day, about 12 in the afternoon, and, you know, changing stories and changing history. And then the rest is history. We bonded from there.
My man. So, the game got kicked off right there. So when did Rayford, you know, take a liking to you and say, look, man, you know, I'm going to put you down with me? You know, when did all that?
Man, the next day. I went home, and we said we were going to get together later on that day. We left the house Sunday, probably 12 or 1 in the evening. He said, man, we're going to get together later on the day. Well, of course, I had a 4 day the day before. So I didn't even wake up to the following day, you know what I'm saying? So he said, you know, so he told me to come down his way, you know what I'm saying, you know, to holler at him. So when I come around his way, of course, of my way, all we really doing, my hustling at the time was the boat, some weed, gambling mostly, you know what I'm saying, you know, with the money I make from the weed and boat, and you know, just steady like that. I really went into the coke. So when he went down there, he was like, he had a strip. He was doing retail and wholesale. He had a strip that was pumping, and he was selling wholesale. I don't think he was selling to the magnitude he eventually got to, but he was still selling joints in the town. So he gave me 100 bags of powder bagged up, and at the time his bags was actually double the size of any bags in the city. His bags were so big, they was coming all over the city to go get his coke. So when I brought him around my way, of course, them 100 bags, I turned to 200 bags. You know what I'm saying? So I end up pumping them, moving them, you know what I'm saying, created a coke around that way, which we never sold coke in the block I was ranking at. So I did that, came back and seen him a couple of days later, did the same process over again, came back and seen him a couple of days later, and I told him, man, I'm trying to get an A for Key, which an older dude who I fuck with told me, man, he gave me that. You need to tell him to give you some ounces. So I said, what's he said, man, he'll give you some ounces if he give you that many bags. So I was like, yeah. He said, man, I'll show you how to cut it up. So I said, what's the message? He said, I have to ask him, man. Ace of Cheese, you might going to need some money. You know what I'm saying? So he said, there's Ace of Cheese in his quarters, and he told me the process. So me going down there being real diligent and eager to just step on the gas, I ain't even saying about the ounces. I went straight to him about the Ace of Cheese. So I was
right,
just like, man, so I say, man, you know, you can give me an ace? So he started laughing and said, I wonder if you're going to, you know, was you going to step up or you want, was you just going to keep taking the bags? You know what I'm saying? So he gave me the Ace of Cheese, took it back. My man helped me cut it up, moved that in a few days, you know what I'm saying? So when I came back to him, I told him, man, you know, I'll buy an ace when you can front me an ace. So he said, I'll tell you what, give me $5,000 and I'll just give you a half. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And he gave me the half. And he gave me the half. It just got real ugly then, so shit, I started making the same size he had down his way up my way. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So after that, it just took off from there. And he started giving me one joint, started giving me two joints, you know what I'm saying? And he got about four or five. So when I started giving about five joints, you know what I'm saying, I started buying and getting some front. So it just took off from there, man. It took off from there. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So yeah. I mean, young nigga, he one of the few young niggas that I met, or old niggas, that was trying to break bread the proper way. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't
right.
trying to stand your way. He wasn't
Richard,
trying to...
How old was Richard at the time? At that time?
Yes. At the time, he had to be, I was 17, he was about 21. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was 21. He got it about 4 years.
So Ray
you
was 21, moving hell of a bricks.
Yeah, and had an incredible strip. The niggas talking about his weight. His strip was incredible. The nigga's strip was incredible. You'll get bust. His strip was, the bag was so big and it was moving so fast. It was 50s. If a nigga come with 49, they whoop you. Like, you got 49, that's going to get a whooping. You're going to get whooped. I mean, and the lines is around the corner. You know what I'm saying? I mean, Shorty was getting ink, man. He was getting ink, You know what I'm saying? They were 87, he got a major plug. That's when he got a major plug, and you know, from California and Columbia, dude, and it got real ugly from there. That's when it got super ugly. You know what I'm saying?
I ain't going to ask you this shit, man. From what I heard with Rafer, right? I heard Rafer wasn't no flashy type cat, and he wanted to keep the flash gang down. Talk about that.
Well, I'm going to keep it real with you. He was the complete opposite. He was super flashy. he was super flashy, man. You know what I'm saying? And later, he played a strong part in, you know, helping the step investigation up on us. You know what I'm saying? Now he was super flashy. He was flashy. I mean, I'm not even going to fake with you, man. I mean, Shorty,
right.
You know what I mean, he loved it. You know what I'm saying? The jewelry, the cars, the clothes. He was super flashy. He kind of really turned me out because they're like, you got to understand, the teaching I came up under, the old dudes I looked up to, they wasn't getting really a whole lot of street money. They was playing with the
right.
banks and doing shit like that. So their whole thing was you can't show the money. You know what I'm saying? So I came really under their teaching. So I was just stocking money. I was stocking money and wearing sweatsuits from Gap. Ray from wearing Gucci
right.
sweatsuits and Fila sweatsuits. You know what I'm saying? I had a blazer, a used blazer, and shit. He had Jaguars and Benz and all that. He put the pressure on me. That's one time I can say I failed the peer pressure for real. You know what I'm saying? He put
right.
the pressure on me to step my game up. You know what I'm saying? As far as toys and all that. Yeah.
Stop playing.
Right. He used to give me the blue. He used to Joan on me. I used to meet him at the restaurant and all that. He got five or six bad bras, five or six dudes with him, you know what I'm saying? They got Jags and 550 coupes and 928s out there. I pulled up in a blazer, you know what I'm saying? But I'm catching more than all the dudes he got around him. And he used to be mad because he used to argue them down about y'all gonna get more money than all y'all, but my look wasn't saying it. So they thought he was just taking a liking to me. So he's like, man, you gotta get something. You gotta do this. I said, man, I'm gonna do something, man, but let me just lay. You know what I'm saying? You know? And shit, man. And as soon as he taught me of making a move, it got ugly, man. It got real ugly after that, man. That's when the girls and all, and, you know, the girls got it. The girls came real easy, more easier. the niggas watching, then the feds start watching. You know what I'm saying? But
Right.
Nah, but he loved that flash.
Okay. Now let me ask you this here, man. When the feds start really coming in on y'all, man, I mean, what actually brought the crew down, man? I mean, what actually hit the ham on the head?
I mean, actually, man, he like I say, his strip was just an eyesore to the city. Number one, you're talking about. He had a strip in like I grew up with apartment buildings, but like I did right in the hood. He grew up by houses, so you got a line, you got cars lined up on a main road, turn on a side street to go on a little ass street between houses. So that was an eyesore on the city, so they know some shit was going terribly crazy around there. That's number one. You know what I'm saying? Then it's flares, and you go around, and they got all type of $7,000 up cars parked everywhere. You know what I'm saying? So he kind of built from there, but they really couldn't get nobody to break the links. You know what I'm saying? So they end up having like a, there's this white girl that he was dealing with. She ended up, what happened, she ended up catching a case. And she assisted him by saying, you know, I'm going to infiltrate him and get some information. So that's how they really cut him to the organization through a white girl that he had took a trust liking to, older white girl that was known by the older her. She was known to make, have jewelry and had connections with dudes in Detroit and Chicago. She was like an international broad. Like anywhere you go, we go to Ray Lennon fights. Niggas would get money from all over cities was fucking with her. So, and old niggas from Washington stamped her to him when he did his research. They were like, nah, she thorough, she keep a connection, this, she that. So him probably looked up to the old dudes he looked up to, thinking that was a move to fuck with her. You know what I'm saying? So he fucked with her. And she handled all getting cars and different things. And she was Josh stepping up his game far as the we can do big boy shit. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up really linking the police in his business like that.
Damn.
Yeah, yeah. So it is so funny because when the police got to actually watching, and it was not, it was known they was watching, everybody on the case really thought it was just him because they was only following him, that they made it known it was following him. So people kind of really, you know, kind of separated. He kind of went in a little shelter, but shit, we ain't know they was on all of us, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I definitely know it was on me because I ain't never stopped hustling. I hustled all the way until they came and got me, you know what I'm saying? So I ain't know they was, so I ain't know they was, you know, they was even on me, you know what I'm saying? But yeah, so that's how they got it to us, though.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm going to pass it over to the missus, you know?
Okay.
All right. So tell us a little bit about the documentary or film that you did.
I did a documentary. I think it was in 2005. It was called A Rise and Fall of the Rayford Epman. And it was I basically touched on the case, touched on some of the experience that we did going through the process of getting, you know, on the streets and all that. And it was a project that people been trying to get me to do for a long time, you know what I'm saying? But I didn't really want to do it, you know what I'm saying? Because, I mean, later on, after we was locked up and spent some time in, you know, Rafer ended up catching the case while he was locked up and started really working with the police himself, you know what I'm saying? So it was a topic that I didn't really want to touch on. But as I started speaking to different correctional centers, you know, going and telling my story and going to shelter home, group home, telling my story, I started saying, damn, the youngins really, really don't got no idea of what's going on. They concept with the streets really was diluted to the point it was almost retarded. So I was like, damn, you know what? I'm going to go ahead and touch on them and give them an insight on how that shit go and how you can have boys and crews and make all type of packs, but then when that motherfucking heat get hot, all that shit going out of the drain. So that kind of inspired me to do it, you know what I'm saying? And I ended up getting together and did it independently in 2005 and put it out there, and it was pretty successful. I'm saying the bootlegs made more than I made, but it got out there on a national level.
That's good. Yeah, so when you were in prison, I think according to what I'm reading, you were only there for 51 months, but you were there facing 35 to life. What were you feeling at that time?
When they indicted me, they indicted me on conspiracy itself. That was carrying 10 to life. Again, it was a murder. One of the murders on that was a Friday without case. They saying once the guy murdered the guy, they saying I drove him off the scene. So that put me to the accessory after the fact based on them. Then they saying the gun that was used in the murder, they saying they gave me that too. So that would made it the 35 to life. Mm-hmm. So, so we end up, getting indicted and everybody, is both 30-something. I forgot how many exact quotations I have. I think like 34, 35 ladies and guys, ladies with his sisters and his mother and his aunt. And then two girls that got caught carrying some money, probably like total 7 ladies, if I serve corrected. And, during the process of we going to the preliminary hearings and bar hearings, keep in mind, visualize 30-something people in the courtroom. So that means 30-something lawyers. So you got 60-something people sitting in the courtroom. So when we was going through bond hearings and status hearings, everybody was, of course, everybody lawyer fighting to get us a bond. So when they come to me now, with me, they indicted me basically on a dude that was at the club that wasn't on the case. They got locked up probably a year or so later. The killings happened in 88. This guy got locked up in 89, was doing some time in Virginia or something. And when they came down, and I guess the investigation came up, before they made the bus, he confided into the government that I know something about that a murder happened down there. I seen it happen, and this is what happened. This is how it played out. So that's how they ended up putting me with the suspects after the fact. So make a long story short, during the investigation, as it was investigating, they took over 5,000 pictures. They had over 5,000 wiretaps, and my name, my picture wasn't on nothing, and my phone, my conversation wasn't on nothing. Why it wasn't on nothing? Because I was affiliated with Rachel, but I had my own crew, so it was more like a contractor. You know what I'm saying? But everybody that was with him, was hanging with him. They was under his direction. So to make it on, so it was hard to really put me with him. So as we go into the bond hearing, and my lawyer cross-examined the head police in the case, a guy, I'll never forget his name, it's Corleone or something, I don't know his last first name, Cornelius. And as he cross-examined, like trying to get my bond hearing, he telling the guy say, man, they died, they had in the transcript that Rafer called Tony Lewis, which is a co-defendant on the case, and said that we told Kirk will come around and get 30. They say that supposed to be 30 keys, and so they said that's why I got the conspiracy to the drug case. So my lawyer saying, if anybody been locked up, they read your type and they give you real name and your aliases. So they had me as Curtis James, a.k.a. Kirk Bone. I'm a big dude, so it was like Fats. They try to name a whole bunch of shit that cover a big guy that I never was even called before in my life. So I guess they was covering all bases. But the phone conversation, my name, the only conference my name would tell you up there said Kirk. So my lawyer was basically saying, well, you got all his aliases on here, but you don't got Kirk as an alias. So how is you saying this is him that's supposed to go get these 30 keys or 30,000, whatever you guys trying to see where it is? So the FBI agent kept on looking into his inside pocket as he was talking and trying to make sure he get his story together. So my lawyer, Thomas Abernathy, bad motherfucker, he turned around. He said, look, man, if you need to get anything you need to work on to find out, man, do what you got to do because we trying to get a bond. He don't need to be. He never been in trouble. The whole spiel right there. So he turned his back to the dude. And keep in mind, I ain't never been to trial. I watched a lot of trials from dudes going in, but I ain't never been in myself. So he turned around, put his back to him, and he was a fly little Italian dude. And you know how these flies do. So he's talking shit to me like he always do. So he said, "Yeah, what he doing?" I said, "He said he reaching in his pocket." So I said, "Yeah, he's doing. He's looking in his pocket, looking at something." He said, "He pulled it out. He's looking at it." I said, "Yeah, he's reading the paper." He said, "Okay, I got him." So he turned around, and the dude put the paper back in his pocket. So he said, "Okay, man, now you sure? What is his name?" So he said, "We called him this. We called him that. We can name all the names on there. We called him Kirk." So my lawyer says, "I tell you what. Let me see what you just read because I don't believe what you're talking about." So the police tell him, "Look, man, I can't show you this." He said, "This is 3/4 of my case. This got informants, witness, and everything on it. I definitely can't show you this." So my lawyer tell the judge, he said, "Your Honor, you need to tell him whatever you pull out in the court is the eyes for the court. And the judge said, yeah. And, man, just picture 30-something lawyers running up to the motherfucking witness stand at the same time, tripping over each other and everything. So when they got that, of course, everything they seen in the paper couldn't help me because they ain't got nothing really on me. But it helped so many motherfuckers with the case. So from that point on, they was bugging me every day trying to find a way to get me off the case but still get a conviction on me. You know what I'm saying? So my lawyer was coming every day with different cops. Man, they said they'd give your cop to conspiracy, 0 to 5. I said, no, I don't want that joint. I said, I don't want nothing. Widows, if they go to trial, it can look like I hurt them by taking a jump faster than they did. I said, man, come up with something. They don't got nothing to do with nothing. So he said, man, I can't come with nothing. So he come back and say, man, they said they'll give you a year or two with a statement. I said, a statement? That's telling. I mean, I got to tell you what they offer. I said, look, don't come back and tell me nothing they saying about nothing about the case, nothing about no talking, nothing about no statement, nothing about nothing. I'm getting sassy because I'm feeling real good. They even come to me every day like that, right? So keep in mind, I ain't never been in trouble, so I don't trust my lawyer. I don't even know your lawyer can't use the shit against you. I'm a young nigga. I'm thinking, every time I take a recess, I see the lawyer play at the DA. So I'm saying, these niggas friends. I definitely ain't going to tell this nigga the truth. That's what I'm thinking. You know what I'm saying? I'm so young and naive. So I ain't never get him a full deck of cards. I just kept telling him everything I did. I'm a gambler. That's all I do. I gamble. And, man, it's so enough, man. It's so funny that my lawyer came and see me one time, 3 a.m, up D.C. jail. And I cussed his ass out because every time a motherfucker come get to visit that late at night, we always say, oh, what you doing? You working with the police? Not motherfucker. We fucks with them. And this motherfucker pulls me out. I'm the ringleader fucking with a nigga leaving that time of morning, right? So I come in the motherfucking visit hall. This nigga got a trench coat on and his motherfucking pajamas with a trench coat on. He say, man, I say, what the fuck did you call me out here this late for? Excuse my language, mate. I say, what did you call me out this late for? He like, nah, I think I got something. I say, what you got? He got a law book at the time. He say, don't you know that lie you keep telling me? I said, what lie you talking about? I ain't lying to you. He said, not that lie you tell me about gambling. I said, man, I ain't lying. I told you I'm a gambler. He said, yeah, well, we might can use that shit. He said, look at here. This, and show me the charge called money laundering. And he was like, you know, any illegal money that be turned to for legal, you know, legal actions or whatever. And the last thing it had all type of shit, but the last word of parentheses was gambling. So he ended up presenting that to the DA, and the DA went for it. So the part of the deal was, they had to bring me to court, drop all charges that I was indicted on, and then I get re-indicted on money laundering, then I plead guilty to it. So technically, through the history, I mean, the streets think I'm on, that I was still officially part of the Raymond Edmund case because they know we was running together, but technically, by law, I'm not officially on the case because they dropped all charges, but they re-indicted for money laundering, so I pleaded guilty to money laundering. You know what I'm saying? So in money laundering, occurred 41 to 51 months. And like I tell, and it's so crazy, like I say, I've never stopped hustling. Keep in mind, all the way up to the day they came and locked me up. So the whole time I'm locked, I'm like, these motherfuckers, everything they saying, they don't got nothing. They ain't saying none of the shit I'm doing. But then when I take the cop to the money laundering, I'm officially off the case now. So they said, you got to go to an allocution. So I asked my lawyer, what's an allocution? He said, that's like a preliminary, that's like a small mini trial. Because the government, either they gave you that cop, they want you to make sure you get the top of your guideline, which is 51 months instead of the 41 months. So I'm like, I got to go to another mini trial just to the cop. So we go to that. Then we go to the mini trial. These motherfuckers are saying all accurate shit that I really was doing. So I'm so blown away because the shit they were saying was shit that only niggas that was supposed to be knew. So I say, man, I don't know what they're talking about. They need to reveal the witness. I want to see who the dude is. And, man, and that's why I tell young niggas today, I don't go off that shit niggas tell you in the streets, man. The DA told the judge inside the court, the person who we get this information from is a reliable government witness. They helped us on previous cases. We can't use him because he's being used in a current case, and we don't want to reveal his identity. And they took that statement, everything they said about me, and used it against me. And nobody never came in the courtroom. I ended up getting 51 months. So that's how that went. Mm-hmm.
Wow. So unbelievable.
So in the end of the whole rigmarole, you know, the bottom line here tonight living live and in color on the worldwide Streets Don't Love You Back radio show is that the man who was making all the bread and putting everybody on was the man who turned that other guy, you know what I mean? And that man's name was Ray Flatman. Is that correct to say?
Right, yeah. Man, I mean, that's accurate, man. It hurt me even saying it, but it's accurate.
This is what I want to say, Kurt, while you're on the phone tonight, man. You know, I just want to let hustlers across America know, from any ghetto, any suburbs, anywhere across the world, you know. I hope you're listening to the show tonight, because this show is letting you know that you can't trust your brother, your homeboy, or nobody. Because if your man get all the way jammed up and they tell you that LIFE, oh, you going to, and if you know something, you definitely going to switch tracks real fast, you know?
Right.
We're just letting you know, you know, it can't be did in a blink of an eye, bro, you know? Because as of today, you can punch Rayful Edmond's name up in the federal system, and his name do not even come up on the federal docket nowhere. So we just letting you know, they can't haul you off into certain areas where your name don't even appear on that federal lookup at all.
To be strictly clean with you, man, I mean, it crushed me, I mean, when he crossed that line, because, I mean, the man was like a brother to me, you know what I'm saying? So it crushed me, you know what I'm saying? One of the dudes, I would have pushed all my chips to the table that would never went that way. You know what I'm saying? But like you say, I mean, everybody got their own bid. Everybody got to deal with their own, you know, decisions they made. You know what I'm saying? And he an intelligent guy, so he fully understand what he was doing. So, you know, that's something he got to deal with. You know what I'm saying? So, but like I tell them youngest, man, you can't be basing, and I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about just in general, like dudes be relating because a dude will bust a gun or a dude, you know what I'm saying, making a little noise, that mean he ain't going to tell, man. I mean, them the dudes that be telling the fast in a lot of cases, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, man, you gambling out there with them joints, man. So I be telling, man, try to find a new way to do it, man, because, man, they giving out. Like, back in the day when I was a young nigga, like the older niggas I come up under, and them niggas was doing shit, getting 5 to 15, coming home in 4 years, doing something else crazy, getting 7 to 21. That nigga's going back and forth 3 or 4 times before I get to be 21. We don't got that more luxury like that. They give out letters now. They don't give out no numbers. You know what I'm saying? One time, you done. You ain't coming back. You ain't going to see your girlfriend anymore. You ain't going to see your daughter. You ain't going to see your mother. It's over. You know what I'm saying? So I tell them, that you got to do that. And with me, when they locked me up, I didn't even know what conspiracy meant. I didn't know nothing about what I was doing. So I tell you, if you is going to be out there breaking the law, you better investigate what you're doing. You know what I'm saying? Okay. If you got a bag of coke in your hand, you better take a day out and go find out what that carried, because you might want to leave some of that in the house. You know what I'm saying? Or somewhere else. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, I tell them all the time, man, I didn't know. I didn't know your lawyer couldn't use your shit against you. It's a lot of shit. I learned on the fly. You know what I'm saying? But the teachings I was under, I knew that under no circumstances was you to talk. You know what I'm saying? It was just being a young nigga around. It's like, man, I done seen it. I done seen what dude's father told. I grew up with a dude that father told. Man, he burned him. He and Shorty ain't never told nothing, but niggas like, it's in your bloodline. You know what I'm saying? He gave him a rap coming up. You know what's his name? Just because his father told. So, man, that telling, man, is mean, man. When you take that street over you, it's a mean joint. You know what I'm saying? So you got to take all that into consideration when you're playing that game, man. That game is a monster.
Right. Yeah. So let me ask you a question. So I read that Edmond was released because he was a government cooperator, and that he's in the witness protection program.
I mean, truth, personally, I don't think that's true. You know what I'm saying? I just don't think that's true. You know what I'm saying? And I'm basing that off because I'm cool with his son. You know what I'm saying? I'm cool with a girl that I know he's been with before. You know what I'm saying? I could do things for his son. You know what I'm saying? The son of, I call anybody for you know my terminology that never broke the law. I call them civilians. You know what I'm saying? So his son always been a civilian. He ain't never did nothing. Ain't never jaywalk. Ain't never dreamed of doing nothing. You know what I'm saying? So I don't hold him guilty for no other man action. So I always kept a relationship with him and looked out for him and did things that I can. But now he's a man doing his own thing, working and getting his groove on. You know what I'm saying? And you know, none of them reciprocated that man out. You know what I'm saying? And one thing about him, if he was out, the mentality, man, he a flashy guy. He ain't gonna stay underwater. He gonna keep his head up and be seen if he got to go back underwater. You know what I'm saying? I mean, and that just me just knowing him on a personal level. You know what I'm saying? Right. But you know, I don't think I say 99.9 the man not out, man. He had the 848. For people who don't know, that's life without the possible chance for parole. So if they do ever let him out, I'm not saying they're not going to let him out, or, you know, but if they do let him out, it's going to have to be some real James Bond shit because that's basically going against the Constitution. You know what I'm saying? And they can do it because they make the rule, so it ain't like it's impossible.
Right.
But you know what I'm saying? But, you know.
People can't fight you, that's for sure.
Right. But if I had to bet my money, I would say not out if I had to bet my money.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And you're a gambler.
and it's like when you go to the Fed lockup, when you look up people's name up under the federal lockup like you do state,
mm-hmm.
and you put Rafael Edmond's name in there,
mm-hmm.
his name comes up released.
Well, I mean, if you
come up release
or do it come up release or don't come up at all.
Sometimes it come up release and then you go back on there and then his name don't even pop up at all, man. That's why I was fucked up one day when that happened. I'm like, damn.
But if you put any well known informant name in and that federal joint, they don't be coming up though. I think that must be part of the policy or something. Any of them dudes that's well known to be told on them big cases and all that.
Yeah, that got to be part of the stipulation.
Yeah. I think that's part of the stipulation.
Put you anywhere. Yeah, they can put you anywhere without people even knowing you out. You feel what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And Rachel was a high-profile
right.
case in D.C., you know what I mean?
Right, yeah,
and,
yeah, sure, yeah.
You know, his case was the biggest in the history of D.C.,
right,
you know?
Yeah, exactly.
A lot of people went down.
Right, yeah.
You know,
yeah,
Rapid did that because he didn't want his mama going to the joint. You know what I mean? So, you know, it ain't like he just jumped up on the stand, saying I'm going to tell on my homeboys this, that, and the other. You know, like he said on a documentary one time when I seen one back in the day. I think before yours, it came out. They had one out, and he was sitting on that. Yeah, he was stating on there about his mother, you know?
But his mother, what happened is his mother actually did about 8 or 9 years, probably 10 years. What happened was when he was in Lewisburg, he caught another case. He was hustling again out of Lewisburg, and he caught a case in there, and then that's when he flipped over. He probably did about 10 years. And then he caught a case locked up. He was hustling again, passing out keys again. He caught a case then, and then that's when he cut a deal. And I guess you know part of his deal was getting his mother released. You know, so off the break, he didn't tell off the break. He did about 10 years, even though I mean he eventually told. I'm not trying to make it right, but he caught another case in Lewisburg. That's how that happened.
Right, and if you let my mama go. Then I'm gonna give you these, but on the silver platter.
Right. That from what I'm saying, that was good.
I'm gonna bring their ears to you on the silver platter with gold wrapped around their ears right away.
Right. Mm-hmm.
The game is ugly, ain't it, baby?
Yeah. It's ugly, man. The game ugly.
Yeah.
Man.
So what we want to say, Kurt, man. Before we get off tonight, man, tell the viewers, man, what are all the positive things you're doing, man, and let them know about if you got a website or what's happening. They want to get in touch with Kurt and do some things. Holler at them.
Yeah. Okay. Well, my Facebook page, I give it out, but I can't get no more friends in that joint. But it's Curtis Kirkbone Chain. That's my Facebook page, and my Twitter is Kirkbone CURBON at All Day CEO. You know, that's my Twitter page. And you know, other than that, man, I've been out here since '93. When I first came out, I ended up getting into the party. I started throwing parties. You know what I'm saying? So that, you know, I still had a popular name, and you know, my name was still good, and you know, people still had attraction to me. So I threw parties. So I ended up throwing parties for like the next 10 to 12 years, and they were some of the biggest parties in D.C. And during the course of me throwing parties around '98, like about 5 6 years later, I opened up I started a clothing line called All Day Sports, ALLDAZ, and you know, so I opened up a store and I started, you know, selling the clothes, you know, Urban Apparel, was, and I did that for a while. I'm still doing that currently now. And I started. It's a summer league that's going on in DC. It's been going on for the last probably 20 years before I even involved with it. But it's got national recognition probably the last 7 or 8 years. I'm the vice president of that. That's called the Goodman League. You know, all the NBA dudes, Kevin Durant, Michael Beasley, you name them, Gilbert Arenas, all of them, they come through there and play Nike sponsored. You know, but my first love, man, is like, you know, I call it volunteer work, and I ain't getting paid for it. I don't got no nonprofit, which I'm looking to do one. I just talk to the youngins all day, cause I'm always in the street. My store is on Benning Road, across the street from the neighborhood I grew up, Langston Terrace. So you know, so all the youngins, they stop through. You know what I'm saying? You know, they want advice or they want to run shit past me, and niggas catching chases want to come through, so it's like a headquarters, man, and I just, like, you know, try to keep it real with them and just give them the real, man, uncut, with no isotol on it, man, you know what I'm saying? I just give it to them raw, man, and try to hope I can save one or two amongst the many I'm talking to, and you know, like I say, man, I'm more of a family dude, you know, so I got 4 kids, 3 daughters and a son, so I try to spend as much time with them as possible. And the rest, man, is trying to figure out the second half of my life, man. And you know, like I say, and I can say one or two along the way, man, because I definitely contribute to a lot of the stuff that's going on now. Because you got to keep in mind them that was 20 some years ago. Them crack babies now 23, 24. You know what I'm saying? They putting bodies in the street now, so I can't turn my back on them. I can't say naive. You know what I'm saying? I can't leave them out there alone. So, man, I embrace them. I talk to them. I mediate. I stop beefs. You know what I'm saying? As long as no blood ain't shed, you know what I'm saying? I'm going to make them wave a flag if it's under my jurisdiction. But if blood spilled, you know what I'm saying, I don't get involved. You know what I'm saying? I just, you know, hope God can handle it, you know what I'm saying, or, you know, whoever can handle it. But, you know what I'm saying, I just do what I can do, man, to try to, you know, save one. That's all. That's all I'm doing, man.
My man, well, we're glad to hear that then, Kirk, man, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, before we get off the air, we just want you to just iterate, how did you end up meeting me and my wife, and then we'll close out with that.
Oh, man, yeah, that was crazy, man, but I was actually, man, surfing the net, looking around the net, man, and Google my name, you know what I'm saying, because a lot of time I do a lot of shit and be into a lot of stuff, so I was be saying, you know, would be coming on my name, so I got a joint pop up saying that Kirk Bone, Gatorade for Edmund DVD, another known snitch. So I'm going berserk. You know what I'm saying? It's 3 a.m, 12 at night, or whatever it was. It was late at night. So the joint happened to be on you guys' web, on you guys' page. You know, the Streets Don't Love Nobody blog. So I'm like, what the hell? So I'm looking. So I know a white dude. I forgot his name. I know he was behind the putting of it or writing it. But all I seen was, you know, the Streets Don't Love Nobody. So I'm strolling. So I see an email. I hit an email. So I say, man, let me hit this email. So I'm in the email, man. I was cocking loaded to say everything that a man on poster say. You know what I'm saying? But I tried to say a little bit to get somebody's attention. You know what I'm saying? And, man, I was about to doze off and go to sleep one and say, man, I hope somebody respond or tell me something, man. And old Rob, man, called me back the same night, man, and you know, rectify the problem, man. And for real, man, I want to say, man, you know, why I'm on here live, though, man, but you won a lot of points for me. You know what I'm saying? That's the reason why I even came on your show, man. You know what I'm saying? Because what you did, a lot of dudes don't do. I mean, even me could have shit I emailed and said I was talking from a fucked up space, but it was protecting my legacy and my honor. You know what I'm saying? So you had every right for real to be like, man, fuck the nigga. I ain't write it. So he got to deal with it. It's in the cyber space. You know what I'm saying? And you took the man route and you called me and seen what my problem was and you got right on top of it the same night. Man, we might have stayed the night at the damn phone for a whole hour trying to, we start working teamwork trying to trace the motherfucker joint down, man. And you got the joint on, man. I want to apologize to your wife because I think I sent it through her email, matter of fact. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, man, you know, it wasn't nothing personal. I didn't know, you know, both of y'all were two beautiful people. You know what I'm saying? I was just looking at the fact that, man, goddamn, I got 44 years of the streets. I got a doctor's in the streets. You know what I'm saying? I got to get to see the fuck going on in this. You know what I'm saying? I got a master. You know what I'm saying? I say, man, I ain't a motherfucking white dude somewhere, man, trying to come up off the black stories, man, you know what I'm saying, and just putting shit out there. Ain't doing his proper research. Ain't doing nothing. It's like, man, come on, son. Niggas done spilled blood in the streets to get where they at. You know what I'm saying? So, man,
yeah,
and so, man, I don't.
Cranky stories. They need to get their stories straight instead of just making up. Get
their story straight, man. So, man, you know, and man, and that's how we met, man. And we've been saying the communication, you know, ever since, man. And you know, and what you're doing and what your wife's doing, man, is big. You know what I'm saying? I mean, this is the type of shit that needs to go with what they call cyber. What they call it when the shit go crazy on the cyber, whatever they call that stuff. Right. Man, this need to go viral. You know what I'm saying? Your show need to go viral, man, because people understand, I'm not going to get too far, but just even on the Trayvon Martin case, like people don't, other races and other people don't understand the black language. They don't understand the black culture. So it's things that we are being looked at in a messed up light when it ain't really like that. You just don't understand how we think and how we move and how we look at stuff. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, man, it's even the language. Like the way we use the word fat, it don't mean that all the time that you're heavy. You know what I'm saying? It's the shape of a girl butt or different little things. So it's like, man, they never really got a chance to learn us, man. And shows like this will enlighten them. So they just like, damn, well, I ain't know that. You know what I'm saying? And that's why I say this show needs to be one of those shows to go viral, man, where people can really get on here and get some real education. You know what I'm saying? Because with me, and my teeth hurt, I want to talk to the dentist. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to talk to nobody that act like they're the dentist. You know what I'm saying? And, and if it's something about the streets, I want to talk to somebody who lived it.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, man, yeah. But, you know.
You know, I just wanted to speak a little bit on what you were saying. And you know, the biggest thing I think with races is that, like you said, they don't understand each other. And there's a lot of miscommunication. And, you know, honestly, I mean, and that is the problem. People don't want to take the time to get to know other people. They're afraid or they don't ask or, you know. But I have to say and laugh a little bit because Rob and I, you know, obviously I'm white, he's black. You know, when we got together, there was a lot of things that I didn't know about, you know, his race or a lot of things he didn't know about my race or just the way we were raised in general. We've had some pretty good laughs about, you know, talking about different things and stuff. So,
And I'm pretty sure y'all,
big miscommunication.
And that's all it is. I mean, once you get to know people and find out, I mean, all races at the end of the day got majority of the same qualities and the same stuff. It's just that we got different descriptions and different ways we go about it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's just that.
Everybody wants the same thing. Everybody, you know, wants to be loved. Everybody wants happiness. Everybody wants, you know, to have a nice home, a nice car, a nice job, a nice, you know, be able to take care of their family.
Right.
You know, everybody wants the same things. It's just, It's really sad the way the world is.
Right, definitely. I was just so upset at that guy that's putting all that stuff. I mean, that was unbelievable to me. That, you know what I'm saying, that you creating a blog or you whatever you got, and you putting people's names by stuff. Like, you gotta investigate. You just can't be just jumping out there and just freestyling. You know what I'm saying? So
right,
I was kind of blown away by that. You know what I'm saying? So it was impressive for you and your husband. You know what I'm saying, to get on top of that diligence. You know what I'm saying? And, you know, and do what y'all did. You know what I'm saying? So I definitely, you know what I'm saying, that's an honor to me. And, you know, anything I can do to help further y'all movement, you know what I'm saying, I'm all a part of it. You know what I'm saying? But, you know, that's all about
speaking the truth and getting the real stories out there. You know, we don't want to hear a bunch of fake stories, made-up stories or anything. We want to hear the truth, what really happened, and how did you get through it. You know, that's our standpoint.
Right, we appreciate that,
Kurt, man. And you know, talking about Simp, you know, I just read about him. You know, they got him locked up in the hole for writing some other stuff for this magazine, you know. So, yeah, he's in the hole now.
I read
that on Facebook. So, yeah, he's in the hole.
See, that's crazy. Yeah, man, and that's crazy. Like I say, and I don't got no problem niggas trying to make no money. I mean, I ain't aware of nobody trying to get no money.
Don't make it all with lies, though.
Come, you know what I'm saying? I mean, do your due diligence, man. DC, like I say, is small, but damn near all our men locked up in the penal system, man. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's 100 or more better on any compound you on, man. Pull them up. I mean, man, what's up with this dude? You know what I'm saying? You know, do a background check through multiple people. You know what I'm saying? I'm pretty sure everybody don't like nobody, so you might run into one or two motherfuckers and be like, man, fuck that nigga, wah, 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 or mad at what Ray did. It might be mad, you know what I'm saying, and bomb everybody together. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, when you go see God, everybody going to be judging their own merit. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I don't care how tight you is, nigga. You know what I'm saying? I got friends that I'm sad to say done rape people and everything. Those nigga ain't call me a rapist, and so I mean don't take it a dude end up being a informant and tie me with him or tie me with adoption.
Don't tie your shoelaces.
You know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm keeping it clean. I'm telling why I'm on air. And I know a lot of your audience is dudes and incarcerated and all that. I say, man, the dude like a brother to me. It hurt me. Slim calls that. At the end of the day, Slim got to deal with that. You know what I'm saying. You know what I'm saying. And that's how that go, man. That's how it is.
What it is, you know. Now, how long
have
you been locked up, man? About,
you
know. 19,
yeah, we got locked up April
1989. Damn, so he's been in that joint by
25
then.
Yeah, 24, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. But is his mother still living?
All of them still living, man.
You know what I'm saying, man? Which man? You ever see him every now and then? Every once in a while, I might have run into him. You know what I'm saying? But you know, I don't see him regular. I've ran into him once or twice since they probably been home. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But you know, cause I'm, you know, where I'm at, they came through my way one time. I'm stationed there. I'm around Benning Road, Northeast Washington D.C. Man, if I'm not there, man, I'm with my kids, man. I'm right there by right across from my joint, Lancaster, where I was born at, man. That's like my office, man. You know what I'm saying? I'm there all day, man. Trying to save one dude, man.
Definitely, man.
But, man, if you got some jail listeners, man, I want to, you know, send a shout-out, man, some homies, man. My man, Lil Rex and Dick Rex and Tony O, Tony Lewis, man. A lot of good dudes I can't think of, man. Mario, Boy Tone, man. There's a lot of good men in there locked up, man. I just want to send some shout-outs to y'all. little Reggie, man, and y'all stay, y'all keep y'all head up, man. You know, hopefully y'all get a chance in the streets again, man. And, you know, and when y'all get out here, man, it changed, man. The town we know, it ain't the same town, man. It's not the same town, man. And I'm not telling nobody to lose their aggression, because we was born as gladiators like that, and we went through that test like that, so we passed that. But the man who's surviving now is the thinking man. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And back in the day, we was rewarded for being gladiators. Niggas gave you money, and gave you drugs, and gave you cars because they wanted to be affiliated with gladiators. In 2013, they trying to get the far fuck away from you they can. So I'm telling you, man, bring your thinking cap out here, man. Bring your thinking cap out here, man, and be
not
on some
thug law.
Being
don't
shit,
bring
man.
That
and you know, I ain't saying be sore, but you know, keep that when you need it, man. And a lot of you dudes gonna make it because y'all can think, man. And just try to, you know, do it that way, man. But I wish all y'all brothers the best, man. All my 007 numbers and 016 numbers, man, and 037 numbers, man. That's DC Lawton, DC Feds, and the Virginia dudes, man. You know what I'm saying? So, man, y'all stay strong, man, and you keep your head up, man.
We appreciate that, Kirk, man, and we appreciate you coming on the show tonight, bro. And
glad you had me,
love,
man.
And we'll get up and see you. You know we're going to look you up, homie.
Yeah, my man. I appreciate that, man. And like I say, my Twitter joke, man, is Kirk Bone at All Day CEO. That's ALLDAZ, Kirk Bone, CURCBONE at All Day CEO. Man, y'all have a blessing, man. Y'all have a blessing, man. I hope God continue to put his hands on y'all.
Hey, we appreciate you too, Kirk, man. You have a blessing, you and your family, man, and stay in touch.
Same to you.
All right, take care.
All right, we're going to go out tonight with the song Life is Just a Story by Will Chapman out of Detroit. Have a great week. Remember to join us next Wednesday night, 8:30 Pacific time, 11:30 Eastern. And also remember that the streets don't love you back. Good night.
You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle, every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell.
Show you how to use it. I flip flows on shows like life is. so abusive. Adapt and overcome the struggle like how he do it.
I
prove it. Showing the world I am a king. Sing to the rhythm, my queen. This is your dream. Man in the building, example for all to see. Life can be a bitch. Keep stroking until you ski. Stand on your own, keep fighting and never leave. Foundation is the knowledge I'm kicking. We're gonna bleed.
See, life is just a story that someone has to tell. You're living in this struggle. Every day we're going through this hell. You see, life is just a story that someone has to tell. So try, try, try. Life is just a story that someone has to tell. So try, try, try.